I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, Wednesday, January 30th. First item.
Approval of the minutes?
Yep. Is approval of the minutes. Should be in your packets from Wednesday, January 23rd. Are there any corrections? Seeing none, Senator Eaton moves approval of the minutes from January 23rd. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. This morning, we're going to deal with two issues. One of them is Senate File Number 119, which is the federal conformity bill that brings for 2012 the Minnesota's for 2012 some conformity items for to reflect action taken by the federal government on the fiscal cliff bill. So Senator it's not my bill, Senator Scoy's bill.
My bill, Senator Rest.
I didn't do that. It's Senator Scoy's bill. Please, do the witness table, or you want to talk from there? Either way. Nora. It's Senator Scoy's bill. It's okay. We'll note for the record that the chief author of Senate File 119 is Senator Scoy. It is... Senator Ortman also has an identical bill that is the companion to Representative David's bill, but they are identical. We're just going to take up. We have both before us, actually, but we're going to take up for amending purposes 119. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. File number 119 is an effort to conform with the activity that the federal government did in their end-of-year tax activities of this last year. I think what I would prefer to do, if would be okay with you, Madam Chair, is to have Ms. Pollack and Mr. Silva walk through the provisions in the conformity bill and also touch on some of the fiscal ramifications of that bill. And then after we go through that, we'll do the amendment.
That's perfectly agreeable. So we're going to take up the actual conformity language right now. It's not very informative if you just look at the bill itself, because it's just a lot of cross-references. So we felt it was important for members to understand what is actually in the bill itself of the conformity item. So, Ms. Pollack, if you would like to take us through that, that'd be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm just going to be talking about the concept of conformity generally and how we've done that in the past few years. And then Ms. McQuay is going to talk about the provisions of that we conform to by reference in this bill, and she's going to be referring to the revenue estimate. And we'll work together to give some context for each of those provisions that we're conforming to.
Great. Proceed.
The reason that we need to do federal conformity is that Minnesota income tax relies on federal taxable income as its starting point. And we do this by reference to the definition for federal taxable income in the Internal Revenue Code. The way that we reference that is by referring to the Internal Reference Code as of a certain date. So as you'll see in the bill, on line 2.10, we reference the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 as amended through April 14th, 2011. There have been updates to the Internal Revenue Code since then, and we need to adopt those the updated code if we want to adopt those provisions for the purposes of federal taxable income as the starting point for Minnesota taxable income. We can't just do a kind of a blanket adoption of the definition of federal taxable income. There was a case in the early 70s where the Minnesota Supreme Court said that we have to explicitly conform or not conform to the updated version of the Internal Revenue Code. So that is why we do this every year. And when the feds change the definition of federal taxable income, it affects us because there are some things that may be a cost to Minnesota taxpayers if we decide to conform, and if we decide not to conform, that may be reflected as not a cost. Some history about conformity. When in 1987 the legislature adopted the federal taxable income as the starting point for Minnesota taxable income, and at this time that resulted in a simpler system for tax calculations. But since then, Minnesota has added various other deductions and credits, and so it's kind of made our tax system a little more complicated. Hence all of the Minnesota additions and subtractions. So I think at this time, and I should mention there are a couple of major provisions that we have come up in conformity in the last couple of years. Most importantly, the economic stimulus provisions from 2009, 10, and 11. A lot of those provisions were enacted for a short period only, and we would conform for 1 or 2 years only. Many of those provisions were set to sunset in as of tax year 2011, but as of the what is commonly called the fiscal cliff deal, many of those provisions were extended for tax year through tax year 2013. However, this bill only conforms for Minnesota for tax year 12.
Madam Chair and members, as Ms. Pollack stated, the revenue, and I'll turn to the revenue estimate right now. The revenue estimate reflects the bill language that says we are only conforming for tax year 12, which is picked up mostly in fiscal year 13, although there are some provisions that have a cost in future years, and those for the most part are provisions that have a carry forward, so you're allowed to expense it for years going forward. So that's why there's costs in future years as opposed to just the first fiscal year in most cases. So the total for fiscal year 13 is a $17.1 million loss if we in revenue if we conform to the provisions in this bill that were in the American Taxpayer Relief Act. Also included in this bill is the FAA Modernization Act conformity. This is something that was included in bills in previous years. The cost there is $1.4 million, and that law allows a rollover into an IRA to not be included in taxable income. So if we turn to page 3 of the revenue estimate, I can begin walking through each provision.
Madam Chair. Could I get a copy of that?
Senator Skoy, the revenue estimate, is it in the folders? Okay, it's coming.
So we don't.
No, we've been working on an amendment to the bill and some. Until late yesterday afternoon, so we're just a little bit behind on things.
Thank you.
And the revenue estimate is only for the bill, the original bill, and does not include the any fiscal impact, which we believe to be minimal, of the amendment. Okay. So.
So, Madam Chair and members, the first one that I'll talk about is the deduction for educator expenses up to $250. This allows eligible educators to deduct qualified supplies used in the classroom. Minnesota did conform to this provision in during the 2011 session, but did not conform in 2009 or 2008. The second provision listed on the revenue estimate that you'll be able to walk through shortly is the exclusion for employer-provided mass transit and parking benefits. This allows qualified transportation fringe benefits provided by an employer through transit passes and van pooling to be excluded from an employee's income. Minnesota has conformed to this provision in 2011 and 2009. I think I will not mention the cost because you can see those explicitly when you get the revenue estimate, and I'll just walk through the description. The next conformity is the premiums, conforming for premiums for mortgage insurance deductibles. So these are premiums paid or accrued for qualified mortgage insurance, and they can be treated as if they were deductible qualified residence interest. Minnesota conformed to this provision in 2011 and then before that in 2007 when it was originally enacted. Next, we've conformed to a special rule for contributions of qualified conservation property. This allows filers to deduct the value of the property donated for conservation purposes. Minnesota conformed in 2011 and before that in 2008. We're also proposed to conform to the deduction for qualified tuition and related expenses. The description here is pretty much included in the title of the deduction. Just a note that filers don't have to itemize in order to take this deduction. Minnesota conformed in 2011, but before that in 2009 and 2008, Minnesota chose not to conform to that provision. For tax-free IRA distributions to certain public charities for individuals 70 and a half and older, this allows filers over age 70 and a half to make a tax-free donation to certain charitable organizations. Minnesota conformed to this provision in 2011, 2009, and in 2008. There is a federal conformity item to conform to a 15-year straight-line depreciation for qualified leasehold, restaurant, and retail improvements. This conformity extends the date by which qualified improvements must be placed into service.
I think we should note that we're not proposing conforming to the Section 179 depreciation schedule for 2012.
And, Madam Chair, for the 15-year straight-line depreciation, this was conformed to in 2011 and 2009. There's a new provision that has come up in this bill to conform to a seven-year recovery period for certain motorsport racing and track facilities, and this is a new conformity item this year. Minnesota does not have a history of that because it has not come up. There is an item to allow accelerated depreciation for business property on Indian reservations, and this would... this is a provision that we've conformed to in 2011, 2009, and in 2008. Next, there is an enhanced charitable contribution deduction for food inventory for corporations other than C corporations. C corporations were originally allowed to take this deduction for food donated to an approved agency, and this was extended to non-C corps in 2006, and we've conformed in the past to this provision. Then the increased 179 expensing with an 80% add back and 5-year recovery. As Madam Chair stated, this provision is not, we're not conforming to the expensing as it's put forth in the federal bill. What Minnesota does is do an 80% add back with a 5-year subtraction, allowable subtraction for 1/5. And so what this bill would do would conform to the new expenditure and deduction limits, and so that carries a cost. The next then is the election to expense mine safety equipment, and this provision allows a taxpayer to deduct the cost of mine safety equipment, and Minnesota has a history of conforming with this provision. There is an allowance for special expensing rules for certain film and television productions, and this was originally enacted to encourage domestic production when films were going abroad. And so this allows productions to deduct the costs in the year in which they occurred instead of capitalize them and depreciate them over time. Minnesota has traditionally conformed to this provision. There is a conformity item to for regarding the treatment of certain payments to controlling exempt organizations for unrelated business income. So this provision provides special rules if these payments reduce the net unrelated business income, and Minnesota has previously conformed to this provision. Next, there is an item for treatment of certain dividends of regulated investment companies, and this allows interest-related dividends and certain short-term capital gain dividends of regulated investment companies to not be subject to a tax when received by a non-resident alien individual or foreign corporation, and Minnesota has a history of conforming to these provisions. There's an exemption under subpart F for active financing income, and this was designed to ameliorate the disadvantage faced by U.S. financial service firms to their international competitors. The provision allows the recipient-controlled foreign corporation to consider the underlying activities of the payer in order to avoid triggering an immediate U.S. income inclusion. And this Minnesota has conformed to in 2011. Madam Chair, it appears that most people are getting the revenue estimate, and so I will just take you to page 4 is where I'm picking up here. In the second to the bottom, there is the increase from 50% to 100%, the exclusion of gain on certain small business stock. So what the feds have done here is increase the percentage of the exclusion, and this was in 2009 it was 50%, and the federal government has subsequently increased that. There's a basis adjustment to S corporation stock for charitable contributions of property. And this provision allows the corporations to adjust the basis of stock in an S corporation by the adjusted basis of property contributed to the charity. Minnesota has conformed to this in 2011, 2009, and 2008. Then beginning on the second page, there's a reduction for the recognition period for S corporation built-in gains, and this allows and this provision shortens the period for S corporations to 5 years, and so this is something that Minnesota has conformed to in 2011 and 2009. Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the revenue estimate.
So members, as you can see, the there is by conforming, there's $18.5 million for 2012 tax relief for Minnesota taxpayers of one sort or another. If you look at the estimate, it's $14 million for individuals and $3 million in the corporate, and looks like the biggest ones are the deductions for qualified tuition and related expenses, and the deduction for educator expenses, and the premiums for mortgage insurance that are deductible as qualified residence interest, which should be important to a number of Minnesota homeowners. Anything further on that you'd like to discuss? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, now that we've walked through this and you have a feel for what's in here and you understand the cost, also we need to understand that this is just for 2012. It will be an issue in the next biennium. It has significantly higher cost if we're to fully conform. I think it is a good thing if we're able to conform for Minnesota taxpayers. We have to figure out how we're going to pay for these things. So we're bringing this forward in recognition.
Senator Skoy, could you move the mic a little bit closer? Thank you.
We're bringing this forward today in a recognition that would be good if we could move earlier on this rather than later. Minnesotans are going to start filing their tax returns shortly. I think there was an extension of that date to the end of January. So we're going to see if we can move this quickly. I also think, Senator or Madam Chair, that perhaps we could move to the amendment now, or do you want to do questions on conformity
first? I think
first?
Maybe questions on the, if anyone has a question on any of the conformity provisions, I'll point out that at least as an estimate, there are a couple of other very expensive, if you will, items that we're not conforming to, that for the current year, which includes the standard deduction for married filers. That's been a thorn in our side, but if we did that for this year, it would be over $62 million. If we did the federal update for 2013 for the working family credit, it would be another over $15 million. And if we did the repeal on the itemized deductions and the phase out of personal exemptions for 2012, that would be another $73 million. So we're not taking up those if members had a question of them. So are there any questions or comments about the update bill as introduced that we've had Senate counsel and the fiscal analyst go through, or of Senator Skoy? Okay, seeing none, Senator Skoy moves the A7 amendment. And Senator Skoy, would you like to explain the background of this amendment and why we're bringing it forward at this time? And then at your pleasure, either you or Ms. Pollock can go through the specific provisions.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. These provisions are provisions that were in...
Let's adopt it first.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'd move the A7 amendment.
Senator Skoy moves the A7 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 19 as amended before us. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The A7 amendment that we just adopted is a number of provisions that were in last year's tax bill that the tax bill was vetoed. None of these provisions would have been the cause of that veto. In fact, in the veto letter the governor wrote, I believe he mentions that he supports a number of the local TIF provisions that would have building projects going forward. So the committee has had the opportunity to review these last year. I think they're relatively non-controversial. I think it would be good if we were able to move these forward earlier rather than later. A number of these are construction activity projects and other things that will be helpful as our construction season starts. I think what I'd like to do is just kind of walk through a few of the projects, and I'm not going to work off the amendment. I'm actually working off a separate spreadsheet, but I think it'll work for the members if you just kind of track along with me. There's a provision in here for the City of St. Paul capital improvement bonds, extending the special law that city has that will expire if we're not able to do this. Itasca County has... It authorizes the county to issue general obligation bonds in addition to revenue bonds to finance their nursing home. There's a provision for the Cook or ambulance services, authorizing them some levy authority. Carlton County Cemetery levy, and this permits Carlton County to levy annually for the unorganized township of Sawyer in their ability, in their effort to try to maintain their cemetery. Senator Stump and I carried a provision last year. There were a number of farmers up in the flood zone in Marshall County that were forced to move out of the floodplain, and so we're extending the agriculture homestead to those folks. Senator Nelson and Senator Rosen had a initiative to promote the Angel Credit in Greater Minnesota and to make an adjustment to the way that is used to try to make it more of a statewide project. Provision in here for
Senator Scoy, I think it's important to point out that the section from that proposal is just the efforts to promote the credit rather than any of the additional language.
Yes, Madam Chair. We're just trying to promote the credit in this effort. I think there will be further bills that we will be hearing that deal with the expansion of the credit percentage in rural Minnesota to see if that's something that we think is that we want to do. But Senator, see, would it be new Senator Schmidt, Rochester? I gotta figure this one out. Oh yeah, sure.
That provision deals with Wanamingo.
Yes, that's the city of Wanamingo. It's expanding the requirements for cities eligible for a portion of Rochester's local sales tax revenue set aside. St. Cloud and area cities has a local option sales tax in this provision. There is provision for Apple Valley. If you recall, Apple Valley has a fair amount of land that they're struggling to redevelop. There's some gravel pit activity that was on that land. And so we're going to, if this is passed and signed into law, will allow Apple Valley to move forward with their mine reclamation project area. And there is the Oakdale TIF provision here as they originally had requested it. If you recall, Oakdale has been struggling with the redevelopment of parcels of land that they have out across the freeway from 3M, and they needed some exemptions to the current TIF provisions. Senator Metzen had a very comparable initiative for Dakota County, and Senator Peterson has an initiative that allows the St. Cloud TIF District number 2 to be deemed a gap district. And I think if there are questions, maybe Ms. Pollack could be helpful on that. But mostly what we have here are provisions that we heard last year that were in the vetoed bill, and we think it's important to move them forward now.
And Senator Scoy, you know, the process that we went through was identifying those items and then checking either with the local governments or the members that represent those governments to see if the proposal still had any juice in them, and that they, some of them we looked at, we saw that they were obsolete, or that parcel that was the subject of a TIF proposal had been sold, so that we didn't need to even consider them. So we really appreciated, as our staff went and connected with members, that we were able to do that. And also I point out with the TIF provisions that you mentioned for Apple Valley, we had a similar proposal last year from Maple Grove, Senator Limmer. Those two proposals had come forward from Senator Gerlach and Senator Limmer, and Senator Ortman had taken those two separate special law provisions and thought it was better to move forward with a general law changes that would accomplish the same purpose. So there's a lot of sections in there that deal with that, but it was the attempt to allow those special law provisions to go forward, authored by Senator Gerlach, then Senator Gerlach, and Senator Limmer. Are there questions about the provisions in the amendment? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Scoy. I appreciate you gave us the opportunity to go over this before and look at everything. My understanding, and maybe research can help us with this, that actually everything in this amendment had been in one bill or the other that the governor vetoed in one of the two previous sessions, so that all of this has been vetted through committee at one point in a previous session. Is that correct?
Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, yes, that's correct.
And that was our goal. There was, you know, some tempting to add a little bit extra here or there, but we resisted that temptation, and that didn't happen. So this is everything that's in here was in the conference committee report of, I think it's House File 247, or that the governor vetoed, but specifically he did not mention the provisions that are in this amendment as a cause for the veto. So
thank you. And as I understand it, there is no or virtually no fiscal impact to this?
Of the provisions that are in the amendment, we've been assured that the fiscal impact would be minimal. We'll ask, now that we have the amendment on the bill, as the bill moves to the full committee, that there be a revised fiscal impact to indicate the negligible impact of this bill. And apparently it will be the one change may be on the property tax refund for the flood issues, and that is negligible, but we'll get the full thing when it goes to the full committee.
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, thank you.
Yes, Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair, the amendment that we added has a negligible cost, but there is an $18 million cost to the conformity.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, thank you. I am clear on that. I was addressing the amendment, so thank you.
Any other questions? Is there any testimony that we people want to bring up? Please come forward. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record, we appreciate your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Todd Koch. I'm a CPA with the firm John Knutson & Company and a member of the Minnesota CPA Society. What I really appreciate, it's very important that you're dealing with this today. Today is the first day that individual income tax returns can be filed. And wouldn't it be really nice if everyone knew the rules that they're supposed to file in for 2012 before they file? So it's really good that you're moving this forward. And I agree with Senator Scoy that the quickest we could do it, the better. So that people are filing the returns you really want them to file. And since both parties are in agreement here, if we get through quicker, I would really appreciate it. I mean, I only have a few hairs left, and I'd really like to keep a few of them. So if we can move this forward promptly, it'd be really good. And a reason that I would really like to move it forward is one of the larger items you've talked about is the deduction for educator expenses. So the deduction for educator expenses is $250. And I was saying that has a $1.1 million cost. But if you think about how many people are impacted, because what's the true revenue cost? The true revenue cost per educator is not $250. It's $15 to $20 per educator, because it's the Minnesota tax rate, if you allow me to round, 6 to 8% times $250, which is $15 to $20 per educator. Look at the number of educators that are impacted by that. Now, most people like getting their refund soon, don't they?
I do.
I'm sure you guys do, too. So people want to file early. If they file early, they have to use the law that exists today. So they will not get the educator deduction. And you may say, oh, that's great. They can amend it later. I'm telling you right now, if they come back to me and ask me to amend the return, I'm going to charge them more than $15 to $20 to do it. So therefore, it's unlikely that they will do it. So they won't be filing taxes the way that you would like them to file taxes, in a way that you've agreed. So if you get this done sooner than later, I really appreciate it. I am very thankful that the body is addressing this so early in the season, so that as we start with the first day of the filing season going forward, we could file the returns the way that you would like the returns filed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We know that what you say is very important to Minnesota taxpayers, that even if it's worth their while to pay you to go back and to amend their tax returns, it's a nuisance. And we're hoping that we can get this passed to the governor with the agreement of the House, and that we can ease that situation for Minnesota taxpayers. Senator Skoy, did you have anything other than that? Anyone else? That's fine. Thank you very much. So we have, we're going to move this to the full committee. Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 119 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Discussion? All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Senator Skoy. As to the matter of filing tax returns, I think it's interesting. Just recently, the district court in Washington, D.C. has nullified all of the, or apparently nullified all of the requirements of independent filers. So you have this huge registration system, and you have to have licenses and special numbers and education requirements. And a suit was filed, and as of right now, CPAs didn't have to do it, but as of right now, the IRS is withdrawing all of those requirements to rethink what is the proper role of an independent tax preparer for individual income tax returns. So, Senator, where'd he go? The next bill on our agenda is Senate File 75. This is also a bill of Senator Skoy's. Senator Skoy?
Yep.
And deals with the June accelerated tax payment. I wonder if, before he talks about this bill, if we could get an update on the status of the June accelerated tax payment based on action taken in, 2010? Ms. Pollitt, can you do that? Or Ms. Quaid, where'd she go? The impact of the budget reserve on, or Ms. Quaid, can you just give us a history of where we are with regard to repealing the June accelerated tax payment?
Madam Chair and members, there's, two sets of accelerated payments. There's the one for tobacco and alcohol, which this bill deals primarily with as far as costs go, and then there's also the accelerated June payment for all sales for filers who have more than $120,000 in tax liabilities.
That one has gone away.
That subset for all sales has gone away because the under the law, when the budget reserve and the cash flow were completely refilled, this accelerated payment was suspended. That suspension did not apply to cigarette, tobacco, and liquor. And so that's what this bill addresses.
Senator Skoy, Senate File 75.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And so as you see by the fiscal note, am I looking at the correct fiscal note for Senate File 75 that has a $304 million?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, that is correct. You can see that there's a hefty fiscal cost in the first fiscal year, and that is the cost to move the payment from this fiscal year back to fiscal year 14, where it would, where they normally would have to pay it aside from acceleration. So then in the future fiscal years, there's what that $7 million number reflects is the difference between the $256 million and the $263 million that they would have had to pay in that. So it's just a shift of fiscal years, and you pick up the big cost one time.
So, Senator Skoy, I think we can see what timing differences, the enormous impact that timing differences have. It's a one-time impact, but it's big. But would you like to comment on it further?
And, Madam Chair and members, this is one of the provisions that we used a number of years ago to provide one balance the state budget. I think that we all know that is a problematic in our budgeting mechanism, and if we are able to raise revenues to undo those shifts, I think it's certainly a worthwhile effort. But as you can see, the cost is significant.
Senator Skoy and Ms. Quay, what I'm curious about is the impact of the $256 million already part of the forecast or not?
Madam Chair and members, the impact would be it's a shift from fiscal years. So we're expecting that revenue to be in fiscal year 14. And now,
what I'm struggling to understand is, since the accelerated payment has already gone away in the sales and use tax, if we now extend that repeal to cigarettes and alcoholic beverages, is it just a matter of the additional dollars rather than the 256? I wonder if the department can tell us, if you don't mind, Senator Skoy.
No,
I'm confused.
Madam Chair, exactly. I would ask the department to come up and explain this, because in my original run at this, I thought that this was, as you mentioned, in the forecast, and the cost would be minimal to bring this, that mostly the language we were deleting was obsolete language, and we weren't utilizing the shift anymore, and that we just were eliminating it from the department.
Ms. Von Mosch, would you like to explain the revenue estimate and then what the department's and the governor's position is with regard to Senate File 75?
Madam Chair, Susan Von Mosch with the Department of Revenue. There are actually two different items at play here. One is the June accelerated shift, which really applies to all sales tax as well as the excise and the in-lieu taxes that are listed on the revenue estimate. That is something where for the sales tax and the excise tax receipts received in July, retailers remit or received in June, 90% of those are remitted in July. That has been on the books in various different percentages for quite some time. I was just looking at the tax handbook on this, and I think it was 2 years ago that percentage was down to 78%. It is now up to 90%. That is typically something that is used to deal with cash flow issues or with budget balancing issues, and that percentage can go up or down depending on how many resources are available. 2 years ago, there was another provision put in place, I think it was in 2010, that dealt with another cash flow issue we were having, which gave retailers a different option a second option for further shifting some of their payments into the future year. There was language in that provision that said once the reserves were at a certain level, that provision would blink off. That provision actually blinked off at the February forecast last year. That is in Section 2 of this bill. And then that is also in the governor's technical bill that will be introduced shortly. We have that provision. That is just a removal of obsolete language.
But that doesn't cost $256 million.
No, that is a zero-cost item. So this bill contains both the elimination of the June accelerated in total and the elimination of the obsolete language.
So what is the cost? Senator Skoy.
Well, Madam Chair, as I listen to Ms. Von Mosch, I think that the action that we're going to need to take is to eliminate Section 1 and lay Senate File 75 on the table and get a revived revenue estimate.
And that would then go to what your intent was simply the making a level playing field for tobacco and alcohol vendors. Is that correct?
That is what my intent is.
Okay. So, Ms. Quaid?
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, that the committee heard Senate File 34, which dealt with the obsolete language already. The cost here is generated by that. The cigarette, tobacco, and alcohol early remittance. They're in a separate category. And so the money that we were expected to get in June of this fiscal year, we're now allowing them to pay like everybody else and pay in July. So that is a loss in June to this.
So, Ms. Quaid, the issue is, how do we get the $256 million off of this revenue estimate?
Madam Chair and members, I think Ms. Von Mosch had suggested that this is a cash flow policy lever to use. And to minimize the costs, we're going from a 90% payment in this fiscal year to a 0% payment in this fiscal year. And so one of the options this committee could consider is to go from a 90% cost in this fiscal or payment in this fiscal year to possibly a 75% cost in this fiscal year. That would ease the burden on retailers, that they wouldn't have to pay all of their June sales tax in June. They could pay it like everybody else in July.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think we should lay Senate File 75 on the table. I'm going to work with Ms. Von Mosch this afternoon. They'll figure out what we want to do,
okay,
and we can come back in the next meeting.
Okay. We're going to do that, keeping in mind that what we are trying to, with this bill, the effect of it is to have a level playing field among vendors. And we had thought that by the action of the 2010 bill that there was no longer a requirement on the sales and use tax for an accelerated payment of any kind. Okay, any questions? We will lay then Senate File 75 on the table for future consideration. The next bills we have are Senate Files 134 and the identical bill 135. We're actually going to take action on Senate File 134, but we'll invite both Senator Dietzix and Senator Nelson to the table to discuss their bills. We're going to be taking up tax policy with regard to tobacco policy a second time a week after next, and whatever bills have come through, including another one from Senator Nelson, we'll take up then, just to make sure that people know that this is not the only opportunity to discuss tax policy with regard to tobacco products. Senator Dietzig. Or Senator Nelson, you can play tag team however you like.
We will. Thank you, Chair Russ. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this bill. I'd like to thank Senator Nelson we've been working together. We both had discussed bringing this bill forward, and so they were both moving forward, and so we decided the best thing to do was to work together and bring this bill forward. We believe it is good tax policy and good health policy. This is called the Little Cigar Bill. It's been around a while. we went around, we've been working together, we went around earlier this week and we're asking people if they knew the difference, and many did not. The difference is this one is the little cigar, and the you can look at them, and it has a little tobacco in the package, and so that gets it around a loophole, so it is not taxed as a cigarette. So essentially, these look like cigarettes, and so they're, we believe they should be taxed as cigarettes. Because they have the tobacco in there, they are not classified under Minnesota law as a cigarette. So we would like to close that loophole. Because they have this tax advantage, these can cost as low as $1.50 a pack, where the cigarette can be over $5 a pack. So our bill just works to redefine the little cigar as a cigarette. We both have a bill. We'll work off of Bill 134. And then I have an amendment, A2 amendment, we could pass out.
Senator Steeds, again, Nelson, would you like that amendment put on now to discuss the bill then?
Sure.
Senator Dietzick moves the A2 amendment. It's an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senate File 134 as amended is now before us. So if you want to continue your discussion, you and Senator Nelson, that'd be great.
Thank you. I'll just quickly walk through the bill. So the Section 2 basically broadens the definition of cigarette to include the little cigars. It also discusses the weight restriction, so how cigarettes are taxed is per thousand, and so if it's 3 pounds per thousand or over 4.5, and so this adjusts the weight restriction to just capture the little cigars. We don't want to capture the larger cigars. That's not the purpose here. And then the next section would be the amendment. It's just also it impacts defining little cigars as outlined in this section of state law. And then the next section does the same thing. And we'll get to page 2. And this is where we would like to ask the Department of Revenue to do a study to look at and make sure how tobacco tax is collected and make sure it's working okay, and then to also reduce evasion and ensure compliance. And so you can see on page 3, we asked for $100,000 appropriation to do that study.
Okay.
So basically, this just gets to, we've heard this bill before, it just gets to classifying the little cigar as a cigarette, what we think it is. And so now, it's important discussion. It's bipartisan legislation. We've been working together. I think now is the time to act. So I thank you for listening to this and hearing this bill, and I'll turn it over to Senator Nelson.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson, you've had a long history with this
yes.
proposal, so we're pleased to welcome you to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Rest and members of the committee. And thank you, Senator Dietzick, for working on this as well as all of the other co-authors. I'm really honored to be a part of presenting this legislation once again. It is a bipartisan issue. We've got people on both sides of the aisle working on this, and I'm glad we can bring it to you today. It is not only an important health policy issue, good for Minnesotans, it also is an important tax policy issue. It's a good policy. Excuse me. As a parent and as a former educator, when I first learned that we had this this loophole in our Minnesota tax policy that was allowing these things to be actually targeted and marketed to kids. If you were to come look at these, and Senator Dietzick and I will keep our samples up here for you, I would challenge you to pick out the difference between these two products other than the color. And that is precisely the problem. Our tax policy allowed these things that we think look and probably act like a cigarette, to not be called a cigarette. And because our definition that we currently have in law says these are not cigarettes, it allows them to be targeted to kids in two ways. One, because this is not a cigarette, it's not governed by the feds now, who the federal government has come in and said, you cannot market cigarettes. You can't have candy-flavored and fruit-flavored cigarettes. Those are a direct market to kids. And yet, because our law says this isn't a cigarette, guess what? We have grape, orange, chocolate. These are being marketed to our kids. And because it's not a cigarette, it's taxed differently, so it's marketed very cheaply to our kids. About $1.50, $1.29 for a pack of these candy-flavored cigarettes because of our tax loophole, as opposed to over $5 a pack for cigarettes. So now is the time to close this loophole. And because of the loophole, and these are not considered cigarettes, they're not even governed by the minimum price laws for cigarettes. So it's time to call these what they are, which is cigarettes. Now, and we know that tobacco is a problem in Minnesota. I know there was a new report that just came out, I think, yesterday and then also last week. And especially for youth, cigarettes are most addictive to those under 20. So it's no accident that there was this creative use of our current tax laws to market these to kids. we've had a sharp decline in teen smoking in Minnesota for 10 years, but it's leveled off. And right now, over one-fourth of Minnesota high school students say they have tried these cheap candy-flavored cigarettes or little cigars, as they're called now. And right now, today, we have 77,000 Minnesota kids using tobacco. So increasing the cost on these products will help keep them out of the hands of kids. It will make sure that they're not marketed to kids in candy-flavored and fruit-flavored flavors, and it will also make them fall under the minimum price law. So I would encourage you to act favorably on this bill. It's a smart tax conformity. It's integrity of our current tax laws, and it's not a tax increase. It's a tax conformity. And with that, we'll stand for questions.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for either Senator Dedzic or Senator Nelson. You talk about marketing to children. Are we allowed to market tobacco products to children in this state, whether cigars, cigarettes, or whatever?
Well, Madam Chair, I would submit to you that something that's as marketed in orange and grape and chocolate, and if we could see the packs, you can kind of do we have the packs? You can see a little bit in how the packages are packaged as well. I don't know that anyone, I don't think we say something is marketed to kids or marketed to adults or marketed to the over 50 crowd. I don't know that if you're asking me, is it written somewhere? Certainly not. But marketing is marketed based upon the characteristics of the product and who they're appealing to. And I think and the feds recognize that candy-flavored cigarettes, fruit-flavored cigarettes, are marketing to kids. And this specifically is not governed by that federal law just because of the loophole in our current tax structure.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I'll direct, again, the question either one of you. Are those mini cigars, are they wrapped with paper or with tobacco?
Senator Dedzic, do you want to answer that?
No, these have a bit of tobacco in them, and so that's one of the loopholes that gets them around being called a cigarette. And so they're, you know, right now, other tobacco products, which is these are paper or paper-type product and no tobacco in the wrapper. This has tobacco in the wrapper. So that's.
Thank you.
So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
And so that is the difference, Senator Thompson and committee members. It's just in the wrapping. It's what the product is wrapped in. And that's the loophole that the current definition allows.
Senator Gazelka and then Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions to either one of you distinguished senators. How many states have this limitation now that you're proposing?
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson?
Might we call up Molly Moynihan? I believe there's at least 9 states, possibly more, but I think we should actually ask Ms. Moynihan if she could join us.
Okay.
Maybe back to
Senator Skoy, while she's coming up, if you had a separate question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question on the paper and the tobacco in the paper. One of the things I think with the change to the 4.5-pound weight issue is it's kind of interfering with some of the marketing that's going on. Have you explored just changing the definition of a cigarette to a, you know, it has to have 20% tobacco in the wrapping and get at it that way? Have you explored that?
Senator Nelson, Senator Dietze?
I'm going to let Ms. Moynihan talk about that. I do believe that that is the issue, though, is that you can certainly change. If we say 10%, okay, well, now they come out at 9%, now they come out at 8%. So the goal is to make sure they're regulated as they are, which are cigarettes.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Moylanen or Senator Dietzick, did you have something further on that issue?
That if someone could come in.
Paige, if you would get distribute the handouts from Senator Dietzick to the committee, and Ms. Moylanen, if you would identify yourself, please, for the record. We'll ask you to respond to the issues that have been raised by Senator Gazelka and Senator Skoy.
Great. Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Molly Moylanen, and I'm Director of Public Affairs at Clearway, Minnesota. And to the question about other states, we believe 8 or 9 other states have a similar definition and have done what we're trying to do here in expanding our definition of cigarette to include these so-called little cigars. The weight restriction that we're putting on them is higher than others because we've learned from other states that tobacco industry, the little cigar manufacturers continue to manipulate the weights. So we feel the 4.5 will capture the majority of them. And to Senator Skoy's point about looking at a percentage of tobacco in the paper, I would agree with Senator Nelson in that that creates a new standard that, again, the industry will try and manipulate by going slightly over or slightly under that weight or that percentage in the paper. So I think it's prudent to stay the course with what we're proposing. We feel confident in our definition, and it follows what the federal government has done with their definition, as well as a number of other states and the District of Columbia.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry I didn't catch your last name. But
anyway, Moylanen.
Moylan. So I get that, but if you go to the weight-based description that you're using here, you've recognized in your testimony that there's still going to be companies that can legally market flavored little cigarettes. So you're just deciding who can and who can't. I mean, because you acknowledge that there will still be companies that market little cigarettes that are flavored because they are more than this 4.5 pounds. You're not getting at the issue.
We believe,
Ms. Moylanen?
Senator, Chair Rez, Senator Skoy, we believe that our definition captures the vast majority of these so-called little cigars that are masquerading as cigarettes, and the definition, I think, is solid and consistent and will capture them in terms of conformity issues for taxation purposes. Now, marketing is a different component. How they market them, that's a different set of law. And to Senator Thompson's point, you can't market tobacco products to children. Do people do it in different ways by adding flavor to them? We'd argue probably yes. But this really gets at how we tax little cigars, how we tax cigarettes. And we feel like because they are masquerading as cigarettes, they should be taxed as cigarettes.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Skoy.
And you don't believe that the companies that are still allowed to market in Minnesota will just fill the void by those that are no longer allowed?
Ms. Moylan.
Chair Russ, Senator Scoey, I think that they will continue to be marketed and still be in the marketplace, but I think that the increase in price by taxing them as a cigarette will be a deterrent to youth smoking, which is really our goal.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scoey.
We are in agreement. I think the mechanism is to figure out a way to make them priced comparably to cigarettes. I get that. I just am questioning the mechanism that you're utilizing. I think there might be better ways to accomplish that goal.
Thank you, Senator Scoey. And as I mentioned before, we're going to be dealing with other bills dealing with tobacco policy. The governor has a proposal so that we will take them all together eventually. So these bills will be laid over, and I think you understood that.
Madam Chair, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, we have a whole lot of testimony too. I just wanted to indicate that these bills are works in progress, and we'll be hearing from a number of different people with regard to this proposal and other ones that we come back to in a couple of weeks. Senator Gosalko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The 4.5 pounds per thousand, what's the biggest that could be? I'm guessing you've figured that out.
Ms. Moylan.
Senator Gosalko, I can't really speak to their weights. I don't weigh them. I don't know how how they add weight to the product, so I can't speak exactly to 4.5 and what that would, what exactly that is. But my understanding is a 4.5 weight is going to capture the majority of the little cigars that we are trying to categorize as cigarettes.
Madam Chair, and that's
Senator Gosalko.
I'm just trying to figure out, how big a cigar is captured under that weight, and does anybody up there know?
Senator Nelson, any comment? We may find out more information as we take the testimony, too.
I think that's Madam Chair, I do think that's a relevant question. I can tell you the purpose is to make our law so that something that looks like this, that looks exactly like a cigarette, weighs as much as a cigarette, is defined as a cigarette. And at the same time, and making sure that it's taxed appropriately, at the same time, we want to certainly not infringe upon that cigar market, those other tobacco products. And I do believe that other states have come in with similar weights at this point to make that distinction.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Ms. Moylan, did you have additional testimony?
Yes.
In addition to, thank you for answering or responding to the questions that were raised.
Thank you. As I said, my name is Molly Moylan, and I'm Director of Public Affairs at Clearway, Minnesota. Our vision is to eliminate the harm that tobacco causes the people of Minnesota. Today, I represent a coalition including the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, the Association for Nonsmokers, Minnesota, the American Lung Association, Blue Cross, Health Partners, the Local Public Health Association, the Mayo Clinic, and the Minnesota Medical Association, among many others. As we've heard, little cigars are virtually cigarettes. They are the same size as cigarettes. Their physical appearance and construction are the same as cigarettes. They are most often sold in packs of 20 like cigarettes. They are usually filtered just like cigarettes. They are smoked the same as cigarettes. Smokers inhale them as deeply into their lungs as they do cigarettes. They contain as much nicotine, are just as addictive, and are just as dangerous as cigarettes. One of the most notable similarities is that they are marketed to and experienced by consumers as cigarettes. The only difference is there is that little bit of tobacco in the rolling paper. It's reconstituted tobacco, making the paper brown. For this reason, and this reason only, they are not taxed as cigarettes. As we heard, a traditional pack of cigarettes is $5 to $6 a pack, whereas this pack of white grape Remingtons will sell for under $2 a pack. Our tax laws regulating tobacco were created in the 20th century. The so-called case of little cigars is a perfect example of where the law hasn't kept up with the times. By correctly classifying so-called little cigars as what they really are, cigarettes, you will close this loophole and uphold the integrity of our tax system. This provision helps protect Minnesotans, especially kids, from under-regulated tobacco products and ensures tax conformity. As the senators mentioned, it's important to note that little cigars evade the federal ban on flavored cigarettes. Little cigars often come in candy and fruit flavors. In Minnesota, we have seen them in chocolate and strawberry, grape and peach, and even alcohol flavors in a transparent effort to appeal to young people. The combination of low price, availability, and flavoring makes so-called little cigars a huge concern for youth smoking. Data show that little cigar use is a growing problem for youth and young adults across the country and here in Minnesota. In December of 2011, the Minnesota Department of Health issued a study entitled Teens and Tobacco in Minnesota. The findings were concerning. After a decade of sharp declines of tobacco use among teens, progress is slowing. The report found that more than one-fourth of Minnesota high school students report that they have tried little cigars, flavored cigars, at some point in their lives. Now, today, opponents to this bill will say, well, they can't stamp little cigar packages because the packages won't fit through the machines. The truth is that the vast majority of little cigar packages do fit in the machines because they're the same size as cigarettes. When a package of cigarettes comes in a non-standard size, and some of them do, they will either make them fit through the machines or hand stamp them. That's simply a cost of doing business. Opponents will also argue that the new definition proposed is too broad, that it captures products other than those masquerading as cigarettes. This is false. The proposed definition has been carefully crafted and is in line with definitions from other states and the federal government. There will be other arguments and distractions, but this is about closing a problematic loophole and updating our definition to reflect the evolving tobacco market. This is about protecting kids from the lure of cheap, flavored tobacco. It's the right move, and it will help make the next generation tobacco-free. I want to conclude by thanking Senator Dietzick and Senator Nelson and many of you who, on both sides of the aisle, who have championed this issue over the past few years. It's been a pleasure, and it's time to finish the job.
Thank you, Ms. Moylan. And is there any questions for her? Thank you very much for your testimony. Please make sure you sign the witness list. Next, I would like to invite Tyler C. Cowart to the witness table. And maybe we could bring up another chair for Aura Hoax as well, if you... And we'll take your testimony in tandem. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Cowart. And if you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tyler Cowart, and I'm the Vice President of the University of Minnesota Colleges Against Cancer Chapter and also a volunteer youth leader with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I first became involved with Colleges Against Cancer roughly 3 years ago because many of my family members have been affected by this horrible disease. More specifically, it's affected all of my grandparents. I've seen these family members and other friends suffer from this terrible disease and endure rigorous treatments. Having the opportunity to become a student leader gives me the power I need to successfully advocate and strive for a cancer-free world. Personal observation about this youth smoking and little cigars is frightening. Seeing firsthand the amount of young people endangering their own lives and those around them by smoking, to me, is very selfish. According to the Surgeon General, 1 out of 5 high school males smoke little cigars, and they continue this habit well into college. Especially on a college campus, why should everyone, not just those who smoke, have to suffer from the readily accessible and harmful effects of little cigars? I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate Files 134 and 135. Young people, who have the least disposable income, make up the bulk of new smokers. Research shows that nearly all smokers take up the habit before they turn 20, which greatly increases their chance of developing lung cancer. 30% of cancer deaths and 90% of lung cancers are caused by tobacco use. Raising taxes and creating smoke-free environments have been shown to be among the most effective ways to prevent kids and adults from starting, as well as encouraging them to quit. I think it is disgusting that the tobacco industry continues to target Minnesota's youth and young adults with these candy-flavored, tobacco-like little cigars. Smoking tobacco, including little cigars, causes 15 types of cancer. I strongly believe that the federal ban on flavored cigarettes should extend to other tobacco products. Until that happens, passing this bill is an important step we can take today to make the tobacco industry play by the same set of rules. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cohart. Any questions for Mr. Cohart before we move on? Okay, Ms. Hoax, identify yourself and who you represent for the record, please.
Hotep. My name is Ora Hoax, and I live in Minneapolis. As you have heard from others this morning, cheap, candy-flavored little cigars lure our children into smoking. In my community, tobacco by African-American high school students is on the rise. And these little cigars are popular with our youth. In particular, there has been an increase in the use of Black & Miles, which is a flavored little cigar by our youth. It is alarming that the only ethnic group to show an increase in tobacco use, including the little cigars, is within the African-American youth population. Now, I ask, why is this? I believe it's the disproportionate target marketing of candy-flavored little cigarettes in my community. I see in my neighborhood convenience stores the product advertising just plastered on the exterior of the store in plain sight of our children who often frequent these businesses to purchase candy and snacks. What we don't need, committee members, is more of these cheap flavored tobacco products to addict our youth. As most of you are probably aware, African Americans already have the highest lung cancer and mortality rates. Now, in Minnesota, African American men and women are 30 to 40% more likely to die of lung cancer than Caucasians. Well, according to our Minnesota Health Department, after a decade of decline in teen smoking, progress is slowing, as has been previously testified. More than one-fourth of Minnesota high school students report that they have tried the flavored cigars, cigarillos, or the little cigars at some point. So today, I urge you to take a stand to reclassify little cigars to what they really are. They're cigarettes. An increase in price is the most effective way to reduce youth smoking and protect all of our youth. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you about this urgent matter which is affecting our children. Asante Sana, and God bless you. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Holt. Any questions for the testifiers? Okay, thank you. Next, there would be Mr. Monty Williams. Okay, well, thank you and welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Monty Williams. I'm here representing Philip Morris USA today, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify here before the committee. A little bit of my background. I worked for the state of California for 30 years. I was chief of excise taxes there and chief of criminal enforcement. I've got over 20 years of experience in tobacco tax administration at the state level out there, and I was also a past chairman of the Federation of Tax Administrators Tobacco Tax Section when I was employed with the state. And I'm here today to express our support for the idea and the theory of little cigar equalization. We believe that this is something that needs to be done and have supported this concept for many years. However, in its current form in this bill, we have some reservations as to whether it will be workable and be able to be administered by the state and end up with what you want at the end of the day. As has been previously testified, these little cigars that we're talking about have the same shape as a cigarette. They have a celluloid acetate filter, as a cigarette does, and are most often packaged in 20. So they look very similar to cigarettes, and that's the product category that we're trying to address here. None of the Altria companies, which is Philip Morris and John Middleton, sell any of these products or manufacture them. But we are interested in creating a level playing field and capturing this category that has for years paid a lesser tax. Historically, little cigars have always enjoyed a tax advantage at both the federal and the state level over what cigarettes pay. This advantage has led to significant growth in this category and has cost the states and the federal government revenue in the process, and it doesn't address the public policy issues. That situation changed somewhat in April of 2009 when the federal government changed its tax structure on tobacco. At that time, the federal government wanted to tax little cigars at the same rate as cigarettes, so they changed their definition. Part of their definition is almost identical to the definition in this bill. Since that time, 15 or 16 states and Washington and Puerto Rico have adopted language to try to tax little cigars as cigarettes. However, the definition at the federal level was two parts. It was a descriptive version, which is what's in this bill, plus a weight of 3 pounds per thousand. And I'll talk in a minute of why that creates a problem. The language in this bill talks about the appearance, the size, the type of tobacco, the filler, the packaging, pricing, marketing, or labeling, and it's likely to be offered as a cigarette. This is basically the language that a lot of these states adopted and the federal government did. The problem with this is it's very subjective, and let me give you a couple of examples. Marketed or labeled like a cigarette. All of the packages we're talking about say they contain 20 cigars. So it's very difficult to say they're marketed as a cigarette. Also, New York passed this type of language in, I believe it was 08 or 09. In 2010, they had to change it to a more definitive because they found it to be not workable and not collecting what it was supposed to and not covering the products. They adopted a more definitive language and had a weight in it. Illinois has also adopted recently language that's somewhat similar to what we have, except they enumerated the items rather than lumped them in a descriptor. They're currently under injunction, and they can't enforce the statute at this point. We advocate for a more definitive test. We advocate that you focus on the features of the product rather than a description of marketing and other types of things. All the products we're talking about have a celluloid acetate filter like a cigarette does. We believe that should be the definitive issue in capturing these products and taxing them as cigarettes. The wrapper is also part of the definition of these products. So it should be, as stated, partially part of tobacco, not whole leaf tobacco, which would make it a real cigar. In addition...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, is there a percentage that the paper has in it that's tobacco, or is there any of that kind of... that would be a definitive descriptor?
It just can't be wholly made of tobacco leaf. So it could be any percentage you want, up to 100, basically. The problem with, and I'll get into this on the weight issue, at the federal level, they did the definitive description plus 3 pounds per thousand. What the little cigar manufacturers did was tweak their product manufacturing process and take the weight of the little cigars over 3 pounds per thousand, to 3.11 or whatever. That moved them on the federal level from little cigars to big cigars, which made the tax was less. So when you have a definitive thing like 20% of the tobacco or 3 pounds per thousand, it's left, there may be room for people to adjust that so you don't capture what you think you're going to capture. So our proposal would be focus on the filter, focus on the wrapper, and if you want, you can put a weight in there. But we don't believe a weight is necessarily required in order to capture these products. all the states or many of the states that adopted the same type of definition put 3 pounds per thousand in. So, yes, they have a statute that tries to tax the products of cigarettes, but since they all went to over, or most of them went to over 3 pounds per thousand, they're automatically excluded. So you have to be careful when you're looking at a weight. I don't know for sure what their upper threshold is for weight that they can add to make it still look like a pack of cigarettes, but I will give them the benefit of the doubt that they can figure it out if you have a weight in there. The other issues in the bill are the way it's currently drafted and the fact that all these products weigh over 3 pounds per thousand, that will kick in as a part of your tax statute that instead of being taxed like cigarettes today, which are all 3 pounds or less, it'll double the tax rate on these little cigars since they're all over 3 pounds per thousand. So we think that needs to be addressed. Also, having them under the definition of cigarettes brings in MPM fee issues, which could have possible impact on your settlement. The fire safe issue comes into play. Now, these all may be things that were intended, but I believe they need to be looked at in more detail to make sure they're not going to end up causing you more problems than they're solving at this point. So in conclusion, we believe there's a way to do this that is more definitive, gives you what you need, gets the revenue you want, and stops these things from being sold at a cheaper price because of the way they're classified. But that requires focusing on a different definition than is currently in this bill. And I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone might have. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions for Mr. Watt?
Mr. Chair, just one quick comment then. So if the feds had it at 3 pounds per thousand, and we're going to 4.5 if this became law, that's about 50% bigger than the example you showed there for the cigar. Does that sound right?
Center.
I think.
I'm looking at you.
This is what I can see in here. It certainly sounds correct.
Okay. Senator, I would just like to say that the weight can be done by changing the makeup or adding things to it, not necessarily making the size bigger. So that's why I say you need to be careful about a weight requirement. Like I said, I don't know for sure what their upper limit is, but something could be added to a filter, something could be added to something else that takes the weight up but doesn't change the visual look of the product.
Okay.
Any further questions for Mr. Williams? All right, thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Mr. Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Monty, Mr. Williams, is there any reason not to leave the definition as it is and just increase the tax rate on what we currently have to get to the same place?
Increasing tax rates can have impacts on the market that may change things. You could possibly get there, but when you raise it to a level that, there's a significant difference now between the taxes on these products, and especially depending on what happens in this session to the rate of tax on cigarettes. To get them the same, you could end up having a tax rate that would cause you problems such as cross-border issues, smuggling, and those types of things to get the product into the marketplace. So, you know, I spent many years of my life chasing down people that did those types of things, and I can tell you that when your tax rate reaches a certain threshold, those kinds of situations become a big part of the equation.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the weight issue, this legislation is drafted to address cigarettes and not address cigars. So that's why there is the weight issue. So it's, I guess in a sense you would say, not to start, we don't want to necessarily lump cigars into the cigarette tax. And as was mentioned, those are called other tobacco products. They're taxed at a lower rate. But I would like to direct the committee to the Section 2 in the bill. And you'll notice in lines, in point, subdivision 3.2, you'll notice that we've included those things that Mr. Williams discussed. In other words, there is an exemption if the product is wrapped in a whole tobacco leaf and does not have a cellulose acetate or other cigarette-like filter. So I do believe we've addressed those concerns. So yes, there's a weight restriction, there's the filter restriction, and there's the a discrimination between how the product is wrapped. So it's a very inclusive, and it kind of addresses all of those issues. And I think it'd be dangerous to rely upon just one of those things. In other words, if we're just looking at defining it as weight, then as Mr. Williams said, it's very easy just to adjust the weight. And so that's why I think it's important to have a multi-pronged process here. And I'm really delighted that all of us are in absolute agreement that it's important that things such as this be marketed be marketed for what they truly are, which are cigarettes and taxed accordingly.
Okay. Senator Dietzick, any further anything?
I was going to point out what she was doing.
Mr. Williams, just to clarify, I wasn't saying don't have a weight. I was just indicating that careful if you don't just rely on a weight, and they all have to have this type of filter in order to be like a cigarette. The weight is a separate thing.
Okay. Anything further, members? Thank you, Mr. Williams. Next on the testifier list, Mr. Court Holton. Oh, and Mr. Thomas Bryant also.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Bryant. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association. That is a trade association here in Minnesota of tobacco wholesalers, sells cigarettes and tobacco products. Mr. Chairman, is there an aide that can pass out just one sheet that I have here?
Yes, we'll get that for you. Thank you.
Thank you. What is being passed out is a picture of a high-speed cigarette stamping machine. This is the machine that wholesalers use to stamp cigarette packages. It can stamp about 30,000 packages of cigarettes an hour. It's a very high-speed machine. Since this bill would tax little cigars as cigarettes, the state's tax stamp would also have to be affixed to each of those little cigar packages. Now, there are several hundred brands of little cigars on the market, about 200 that my wholesalers sell. About 50% of those are the same size as a cigarette package, so they fit through the machine. The other 50% are different sizes. These would fall under the category of the definition that's under the bill, with the 4.5 pounds per thousand. They're really small cigars. They've never been considered little cigars. It's a package of 16 filtered cigars. They would fall under that. These six-pack of mini cigarillos have always been considered small cigars in the industry, not little cigars. They would fall under the definition. They would have to be cigarette tax stamped. What a cigarette stamping machine does is this. If you go from right to left on your picture, an employee puts the carton on the conveyor belt. The machine moves it across, slits open the bottom of the package, affixes 10 cigarette stamps all at once, recloses the top, applies glue, and affixes the bottom. This is a cigarette tax stamp. It's a portion of a roll. Think of a roll of wax paper and stamps all across it because the machine heats the wax and applies the stamp to the bottom of the cigarette packages. These products don't fit through those machines. There is no machine that will stamp these products in this size. The machines adjust minutely for height in the package size, not depth. In fact, these packages are so thin, the stamp won't even fit on the bottom. It's too big. The testifier from Clearway indicated that cigarette wholesalers will simply hand stamp those products. This, and I've demonstrated this before in this committee, is a hand stamp iron. You plug it in. A person proficient in hand stamping packages of cigars like this can do about 350 or 400 an hour compared to the 30,000 that they can do through the machine. This is what they would have to do. I had a conference call with my wholesalers yesterday. Every single one of them said they would not hand stamp little cigar packages that cannot be stamped through the cigarette machine. That means they would not sell approximately 100 brands of little cigars in the state of Minnesota. That means the state loses revenue, as do wholesalers and retailers. What do consumers do who want those products? They can purchase these same products on the internet right now with free shipping, no excise tax, no sales tax, and it will come to you in the U.S. mail. That's how they will get those if they don't want to switch to a different brand. That results in a de facto ban on the sale of legal tobacco products in Minnesota on these small cigars, or little cigars as the bill would define them. In terms of the FDA, you heard testimony that the FDA regulated flavored cigarettes. That's true. When Congress passed the law giving the FDA the power to regulate tobacco products, it gave them the power to regulate cigarettes, roll your own cigarette tobacco, and smokeless tobacco. But it extended that power to other tobacco products. About a month ago, the FDA issued what is called a regulatory notice. They notified the public that by April of this year, they're going to issue new proposed regulations on other tobacco products, that being most likely cigars, pipe tobacco, and electronic cigarettes. So the federal government has not yet regulated cigars, but it appears likely that they're going to issue proposed regulations in about 3 months to do just that. You have a revenue analysis before you, which indicates that there's going to be additional revenue from the sale or from the stamping of little cigars and the changeover of the definition. I looked through all the 13 points on the back of the revenue notice that they took into account to draft the revenue notice. I respect the Department of Revenue's calculations. I work with those people a lot on this very thing. But this revenue notice has two things that I think may change the analysis. First, it doesn't take into account the non-sale of little cigar products or small cigar products that won't be sold because they can't be stamped. And remember, that's about half of the brands of little cigars or small cigars. So if they're not going to be stamped in the state of Minnesota or sold, that would reduce the revenue increase because those products won't be there on the market. Second of all, this revenue analysis assumed that the non-settlement cigarette fee of 35 cents a pack would be applied to all the little or small cigars. You may remember back in 1998, the state settled with four major tobacco manufacturers, cigarette manufacturers, and they have to pay an extra amount to the state for that. Then the state, I think in 2005, added a 35 cent fee on cigarettes manufactured by companies that were not part of that settlement. These cigar manufacturers were never part of the litigation, never a part of the 35 cent fee. I'm an attorney, and my thought process tells me that if the 35 cent fee all of a sudden applies to all the small and little cigars, there may be legal action that the state would be facing because they were never encompassed within the settlement or the original fee. So just something to consider, those two things in the revenue analysis should probably be looked at. So with that, I'll let Court Holton testify and take any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Holton.
Thank you, Chairman, members. And I've been around here for a long time. I was just reflecting on that this morning. I think when the longest-serving member of this committee started her service, I was a nine-year veteran already. One of the things that I was able to experience over those years were the cigarette wars, most particularly the cigarette issues that involved youth smoking. And I remember thinking, wow, I'm lucky. At least representing cigars, I don't have to get involved in that nasty fight. But here I am. I have a few things to put on the record. One of the discussions is what is the difference between a cigarette and a cigar? You could make either one, either size, if you wanted to. I suppose you could have a cigarette that was that big. It doesn't exist, but excuse me. Cigars consist of flue-cured tobacco. They're primarily acetic. They have a smoother taste. They have a higher sugar content. Little cigars are air-cured or fermented. They have a stronger taste, a lower sugar content, and they're primarily alkaline. Now, if you were a chemist, that is the major difference. What difference does that make? What does it create in terms of a consumer? Cigarettes are much smoother. Cigars are much harsher. And if you have a big, long, expensive stogie, by the time that smoke gets to you, it's mellowed a lot. These are what we call in the industry popular price cigars. You wouldn't find one of these going for $20 a stick. And it's their price makes them attractive to a much larger crowd. This is the largest company right there. Because of the harshness, tips and filters are popular, and also flavoring is popular. It takes some of the harshness out of this. A small cigar runs very hot, and it's harsh to the taste. That's why cigarette smokers don't smoke them. We're a niche market, which I think is important to understand. In the next 2 days, measured by dollars, the cigarette companies will sell as much product as the cigar industry will sell in a year. Now, that's how small this industry is. Now, I'm being told the story of grape cigarettes, and I want to address that. When we first started this, we've been at this table a number of times, and I've seen the literature in that, and it strikes me that there's a target out there by the anti-smoking groups, and I think I know who the target is and what the product is. And the question is, and the accusation is, people marketing to kids. And there's all sorts of conflicting information on that, mostly anecdotal or survey-based. I think you could answer that question. If we know who the target is, it's not that difficult. And there's studies being called for in this bill. You could easily study the sales of that company. Not only could you get a profile if you did a little more work, but just the raw sales. I would submit to you that they are so small that the lack of significance would jump out at you. Now, the definition that's in the bill has been discussed a lot. When you go to 4.5, all of these products will fail to meet that standard at 4.5 pounds. They will be knocked out of the Minnesota market because the wholesalers are not going to go back to hand stamping for the amount of market share that cigars have. It's not worth it. So they'll be gone. There will be at least one company still here that will inherit the marketplace. What a gift. I was stunned when Altria, I still call him Philip Morris, testified in favor of this bill today because that's their product. The last thing that I would point to is the, and I appreciate the subjective criteria in both the federal statute where this bill language was obviously copied from, the attempt to try to say what they're after instead of, you know, instead of just a weight or something like that. Back to having been around here for a long time, if we go to the 4.5 pounds, when all the dust is settled, I know, because you've got abstract criteria versus concrete criteria, no matter what the legislature enacts, the criteria will become 4.5 pounds because that's enforceable. And what you've done in, oh, and the other thing, once somebody asked me, why are you testifying against the bill? For a lot of these products, going from the cigar tax, which is 70% of wholesale price, to the cigarette tax actually lower the tax on a number of these products. It doesn't do us any good because they won't be for sale. They will be sold in Minnesota, but they'll be distributed by the internet marketers, which sales are consistently being lost to. Lastly, little cigar sales are down about 20% in the last couple of years. So if some of these companies are cigarettes masquerading as cigars, they're being wholly unsuccessful doing it. And that's where I would direct you to look. Pull up the sales figures. And especially on those target companies, I don't think these are really the target based on the literature that I've read. But ironically, you could stamp the product that's the target so its price would go up a little bit. These, who I don't think people are actually saying that this looks like a cigarette, and we know the profile of our consumership. It's predominantly male, and it's well over the age of maturity, of adulthood. I'll stand for any questions.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to get back to this Philip Morris issue. I will say that when a company such as that gets up to testify and generally is in favor of a taxation, I kind of started scratching my head and saying, what's going on here? Well, you just explained it to me. Essentially, they have a product that functions like a small cigar, a little cigar, whatever, but it will fall outside of the regulatory criteria, so for them it's going to eliminate competition. Am I understanding that correctly? I don't mean to besmirch Philip Morris if I'm wrong, but is that what you said?
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention them at all until they got up and testified, but they bought the Middleton Company, which makes little cigars, and uses essentially pipe tobacco, which is heavier, and heavier tip, and they get over the 4.5. I don't like to mention company names, but these are some of the most popular. They won't get over the 4.5. So what's left will be what you can stamp with a machine and what's over 4.5. So, yeah.
So it's basically... Mr. Chair, it's basically then a company saying, hey, we got lucky here. We've got a product that'll escape the criteria, or that one particular issue, and that's the weight. And so a lot of the competition will be eliminated if this tax goes into place.
That would be the end result. I'm not going to, you know, make comment on motives, but yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Anything further, committee members? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Holt and Mr. Bryant.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. And Mr. Williams, a few further comments?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you. I thought I was done, but I felt after that last testimony I had to say something and clarify something. This is a John Middleton product. What classifies what was being said is a little cigar that would be, you know, the market grabber from this bill. This is a cigar. It has a natural leaf wrapper, and it has a plastic tip on it. It does not have a cellulose filter. It weighs over 4.5 pounds per thousand, so it would not be captured under this bill. That's correct. But this is a true cigar. That's not what this bill is trying to capture. They're trying to capture these that look like cigarettes. As you can see, these are completely different. They're larger. They have a plastic tip on them. These Swisher products would not be captured under this bill because they're whole leaf wrapped and they have no tip or filter on them. So I just like to say this isn't a marketing switch. It's cigarettes competing against something that looks and acts like a cigarette, not cigarettes competing against a true cigar in the marketplace. These are machine-made large cigars. That's completely different than the small little cigars with the celluloid acetate filter. And I just wanted to make that clear so we don't have some confusion here as about what products we're talking about and what this bill is trying to accomplish. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I just want to be perfectly clear that my intent here is not about how much revenue is going to come into the state of Minnesota, nor is my intent about who can market and who can't and who's going to win in the tobacco marketing and who isn't. My concern is about kids. My concern is about kids getting cheap products, candy-flavored, fruit-flavored, because of their exemption from the federal ban. We know that for every 10-cent cost increase in tobacco, there are 6% fewer teens who pick up. And we also know that of adults who might be trying to quit, I mean, you know, every adult just about that I've talked to wishes they weren't ensnared by these things. Even adults, 2% more quit with every 10-cent cost increase in tobacco. So this is not about trying to protect a particular tobacco manufacturer. And, in fact, I have great confidence in the market. And if there's a market, I believe there will be a product to fill that need. Our job as legislators is to set policy such that our marketers follow what we would like. And I firmly believe that we all would say these are cigarettes. And that is the intent. So it is not about protecting a certain industry. It's about protecting kids. And it's about, I guess one would say, truth in advertising.
All right. Senator Dietrich.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank all the testifiers. I think we had a good discussion here, and that's a lot of what we're doing. This tax reform committee is having good discussions. I would like to point out, because one of the testifiers said that a lot of these products might be going to the are sold over the Internet and might be going to the Internet if we do this. I have a House research here paper from last August, and it says that actually a use tax applies to consumers who purchase untaxed cigarettes. So if you buy the cigarettes or the little cigars on the Internet, you should be paying this use tax, and then potentially the Nexus affiliate bill, that is one of my questions, Senator Rest is not here, you know, would those products be taxed again on the Internet if you are buying cigarettes over the Internet? So I'd just like to point that out and, again, give another thing for the committee to think about. Thank you all for listening to the testimony and for hearing this bill. We appreciate it. We will take some of what Senator Scoia said under consideration and lay the bill on the table and continue discussing it. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. To both of you for presenting your bills. As Chair Rest had mentioned, there's going to be further discussion about this in the future and probably some other bills introduced, too, that we'll be hearing in the future. So what I'll do at this time is lay over Senate File 134 as amended and also lay over Senate File 135. Okay, anything further from members for today?
Tomorrow.
Okay, tomorrow we meet at 9 a.m. And if that's it, we're adjourned.